Valentine's Day coming up.
Yeah.
I wish someone had given me some relationship advice many years ago.
The reason why?
Get married. Is there all the single guys out there listening? If you're thinking about getting married, get married on Valentine's Day.
That way you can remember your anniversary.
Oh, you don't step on the punchlines. Because that wasn't it, but it steps on it.
If you didn't say we could leave that in.
I might actually do that, but we'll try the backup. That might work.
Okay, try again.
Valentine's Day coming up. Hello and welcome to episode 110 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tubingen, Germany, and with me, as always, is
Adam
in Vancouver, British Columbia. I'll just go ahead and finish that for you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to do after 110 episodes.
Sometimes I like to just mix it up and not say where I'm from.
Sure. Yeah, that's what people like. Change. Yeah. Sometimes we'll just do the show backwards. We'll start with the websites, go through the next week's photo challenge, and then whatever else happens backwards. I don't know.
Let's have a backwards episode.
Done.
All right.
April 1st, we'll do that.
Great.
Yeah. What's going on, Adam?
Same old over here, buddy.
Yeah?
Yeah, not much different. It's weather is the same. It's gray every day. It rains a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And what's new? I have something that's actually new for you.
Great.
A new holiday that they just introduced this year in Canada. It's not actually in every province, but different provinces are calling it different things.
Is it Family Day?
Yeah, Family Day on Monday. So it's a long weekend for us here.
Wow, Family Day.
I'm excited. Just a day off, a paid day off for no reason other than to enjoy my family.
Yeah. I'm a fan of days off, obviously. Look at my life. But having another holiday is great, especially if you're French, because, you know, they have holidays within their holidays. But Family Day, could we have not done better than that?
I will say that there are lots of family-oriented things going on. I think in the city there's some different activities, lots of promotional things. I think you can kids ride the ferries for free over this weekend. So okay. Different things they've introduced to try to make family-friendly activities more doable.
I understand the idea of the family-oriented. I like that. I like my family. I like your family. So I like the idea of family. I just think that calling it Family Day seems like some sort of joke on The Simpsons or something.
Yeah. We'll call it whatever you want. It's a vacation.
All right. You know what? Next week we'll come up with something better. Isn't there somebody's birthday in the middle of February that we could shoehorn in there?
Sure.
All right. How many more minutes do you want to do on this?
I think we're good.
Yeah. Okay. I want to say a quick thank you, by the way, to people who are recommending us on various forums on the internet.
People do that?
Yeah. I check our stats every once in a while, and I can see one of the metrics. I just wanted to use that word, metrics.
Right.
Used to measure things is where people come from. And so if people recommend us via a link on some page, it shows up that people came from there.
Okay.
I can't tell where you've been just before that, or I can't even tell who you are or anything like that. I just know that somebody came that way.
Okay.
And so anyway, so there's been a few of them popping up this week from different forums where people have said, hey, especially the Star Trails has been the big thing.
Okay.
Hey, check these guys out. And so I want to say thanks for promoting us, and that's it. It's very, very, very helpful to help
build our
audience.
But to no one specific, just thank you to those people. You know who you are.
Well, also Joseph Puglio, thank you for recommending us. And what were you surfing before? That is some weird stuff, man. Yeah. No.
Okay.
No one specific. It doesn't work like that.
All right.
What'd you shoot this week?
Headshots, buddy. Lots of headshots.
Yeah. Lots of them. Why lots of them?
Well, I did some for my work. It just so happened that my work asked me if I would do some headshots for some website stuff, promotional materials and stuff. So I did headshots for my staff one day.
Nice.
So it was a week of headshots. Well, not a week, but I did a bunch. And then I did some, I did one of my wife for, I thought for her, you know, whatever she's going to use it for, maybe something work oriented. She put it up on Facebook, of course, as her new profile picture, and did a couple for some friends that she had over all in one evening. Cause there was a couple of them over. So I did a few headshots for her and her friends.
Is it starting to become that where when her friends come over, it turns into photo? Like just even even if it's only like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That tends to be, yeah.
Not really, but this was an opportunity of someone I knew pretty well, one of her friends I knew well, and I'd done lots of photos of her kids and family in the past, and so I sort of said, you know, do you mind if I do a headshot for photo challenge? You can use it for whatever you want too, and that way I knew she couldn't turn me down because I've done photos for her family in the past, so you know there was that. But no, I don't really like to do that, interrupt my wife's doings, unless there was something that potentially that they would want me to do.
So, right. Yeah. Well, I don't do it for that. I don't do it for my own reasons. It's just I think that secretly people are kind of hoping when they come over. Like, I just noticed that her friends started dressing up for coffee now.
Maybe that's because they think you're outrageously good looking.
Well, that's obvious, but yeah. I just got to check my makeup and then we'll have coffee.
Right.
And so, yeah, all right, fine. We'll do some photos. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Great.
So what about you?
I painted my daughter's room this week.
Okay.
It's not pictures, but this is art. Yeah. I painted a new purple color.
And it was purple before?
No. No, I guess, good point. When I phrase it like that, it is confusing. No, it was white before. I live in Germany, man. The walls were white, and I decided in the whole, she no longer has to live in daddy's office, that she can have a real girl's room.
Right.
Picked out a nice purple color.
Great.
And so, this is more advice. When they tell you that a can of paint, on the can of paint, it tells you how many square meters it will cover.
Right.
They're lying.
They're underestimating?
Oh no! Oh yeah, that sounds right. That's right. No, no, they're doubling it.
Right.
So this will cover 25 square meters, and I thought great because guess how big the walls are? 25 square meters of the area that I was painting.
Okay.
And I thought this is excellent. This is gonna work out perfectly. I'm gonna spread it. Oh, can't wait. Yeah, I went and bought a whole another can. Of course. It was about 12 and a half. Liars.
Okay. Did you take it up with management?
No. It was advertised on the paint and the store. They're not responsible. I don't know. Plus, nobody cares.
Right.
All you have is a half purple room. Stores are closing in 20 minutes. They're not open Sundays. What do you want to do? How do you want to proceed?
So you got another can.
Yeah, you buy a second can. But it looks good now. But the good news is it provides a nice photo backdrop. In fact, it was the photo backdrop for last week's album cover.
Oh, okay. I remember the picture.
Did you recognize what it was?
I did.
Okay. We got some people guessed. There's a few guesses, and then some people did guess Inukshuk, which is kind of a general guess, but it was more specifically it was the Vancouver English Bay Inukshuk.
Okay.
Like I brought it up on an old picture, and I tried to make it.
Yeah,
as best I
saw the picture and everything, and then everybody kind of clued in who didn't know. But I saw early on someone had guessed it right off the bat.
Yeah, they didn't say the Vancouver one though.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. So I forget who did the man. I had someone's name because you did promise you would sing their name this week.
I made no such promise.
I have it right here in writing.
Yeah, you wrote it.
It's my handwriting.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, boy, whose name should you sing? I don't know. I want to get this right.
Okay.
I don't know who got it right.
That's unfortunate.
David. Let's say a David Paulin. I think that's how you say his name. So go ahead and sing his name.
David Paulin.
To Jumping Jack Flash.
Oh, I'd say you said that too late. I already sang, so now you got to do it.
I don't know. So there's that. Anyway, so we shot that. I enjoy the purple background. I've done some shots around that now, so it's kind of fun. You can light it. You can make it dark. It's great. Other than that, very little shooting.
Okay.
I have something over here I like to refer to as the winter blues.
Does that mean you cry yourself to sleep?
Well, I do that every day, but regardless.
Okay.
But no, this was just with the weather and everything happening, I just don't feel like getting out and taking pictures. You?
Yeah, not a lot.
It's just really a really mopey time. Like, it's hopefully spring's going to break and you know, come very soon. And, you know, what with Family Day this week, I guess maybe that'll change, but.
I didn't even plan to take my camera, so.
Don't bother. Leave it at home.
Yeah.
March. We'll do it in March.
Yeah.
Last week's Exif Oku. We had a number of guests. We had a few people guess on mine. Someone guessed. Sorry, forget who it was. Guessed way off.
Were they guessing focal length?
Yeah, it was focal length last week. There's the picture of my daughter making the stink face.
Yeah.
And then yours was you balancing the flash outside.
Right.
So people are guessing 50 millimeters on yours, but I guess what they didn't take into account is that you have that new 85 mil lens, and that's not coming off for a while.
Oh, and I don't even have a 50 millimeter lens anymore, so.
You if you wanted to, you couldn't even make a 50 millimeter focal length, could you?
No.
So there's that. So everybody keep that in mind for this week's Exif Oku, but spoiler alert, it's not going to be focal length. So yours was 85, and mine was quite a bit longer. It was 118, which was representative of my 70 to 200, and I just zoomed into whatever I felt right.
Yeah.
Which turned out to be 118 later on. It wasn't a specific target.
Okay.
But that's what compressed it, everything. That's what made it look like it looks. So there you go. That's last week's. This week's photo challenge, Adam.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I should mention, I did have a double espresso this morning.
So you're wired.
I did go and bust off 100 push-ups, so I also threw up.
There's no way you can do 100 push-ups.
That's not... Are you joking?
Those little spaghetti arms.
No, you're joking.
No, I'm fully serious.
I will out-push up you.
Not a chance.
Are you joking?
Not at all.
How many push-ups can you do? This is getting weird testosterone area.
To be honest, I haven't counted in a while, but I can, whatever you can do, times it by 1.6. We'll make it like a crop sensor.
You are on. You are wildly underestimating.
Not at all. You send me a video, an unedited video of your push-ups, and I will send you a 1.6 version of mine.
Really? Of just consecutive push-ups?
Absolutely.
Like start to finish?
Start to finish, and you have to have some reasonable form.
Oh, no. I'm just going to go on my knees and arch my back and all that.
That's what I'm afraid of.
You ballpark it, though. Like, what are you expecting me to send?
What am I expecting you to send?
How many consecutive push-ups are you expecting me to send?
Well executed, I'm going to say about 50.
And so you're going to do 1.6 on top of that? You're going to do 80 push-ups?
Yeah. If you do 50, I will.
Well, I'll do much more than 50.
Okay.
But you're not doing 80.
Absolutely.
This is getting weird now because I can't tell if you're kidding or not.
I'm not kidding at all.
Oh, this is getting bad. No one wants to hear this.
I think you're getting nervous.
No, I'm not. I'm just shocked that you think you can out-push up me. Yeah.
Don't be shocked. I'm freakishly strong.
Well, I would hope so, based on your shooting your mouth off like this. All right, well, let's get into the photo challenge. Wow. Well, the whole point, no, hang on. The whole point of me doing getting the double espresso and the push-ups is because last week I was called out by Robert Barone. I'm going to say his name because I've seen him post before, and I always think that, wasn't he on Everybody Loves Raymond?
What was that guy's name?
I don't know. I've never seen the show, but it just seems like it would be on that show.
Okay.
And so I guess not everybody loves Raymond because I never saw it. But anyways, he was very polite about it. He's like kind of like, wow, maybe you should try that again. And for last week's show, because he was right. I was not good.
He was blaming you?
No, I don't think he didn't blame me specifically, but I knew full well. I didn't feel it last week.
Okay.
Episode 109 was not my best.
Okay. So, I don't remember it, so.
Oh my god. I wasn't feeling well and I phoned it in. Energy levels were down and
is this an apology?
No, no. It's just a full admission.
Okay.
So it was to the point where I was like, "Man, we should do that again before I published it." And then I was like, "No, there's no way Adam will ever do it again."
So now you're blaming me.
No. No. And then I thought, well, maybe I'm being too critical on myself, too overcritical. Maybe no one else will care. And turns out they did. So good for Robert for pointing it out. I appreciate it. No joke.
But this episode is going to be so awesome.
Yeah. So when I say that I appreciate him pointing it out, I know I'm cool with it because I'm very secure. But when Adam phones it in, don't mention it.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. A little bit of a... I don't want to say crybaby, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sensitive soul.
Okay, but man, can he do push-ups.
Yeah.
Through all his tears. It's awesome. It's an awesome sight to see.
We should just have a Al versus Adam push-up calculator, like right embedded into our website. So if anyone has a question as to how many push-ups I can do relative to your number, it's easy to access information.
Uh-huh. How many have you done today? No, let's just break it down. My day is only 30 minutes old. How many have you done today?
I've done no push-ups.
Oh, no, today. None. I've done 100. So technically, you should have done 160 by now.
Right.
In theory, no, going by what you're talking about.
Yes.
Great.
The beauty of it is I don't think I'm ever going to see your push-up video.
Why would I shoot a video of me doing push-ups? Who does that?
It's just a little friendly contest.
This doesn't sound friendly at all. This sounds a little bit confrontational and narcissistic. At no point is anybody going to say, "Hey, did you make a video of you shooting, of you doing push-ups today?"
Someone's going to say it. Absolutely. We've spent at least 11 minutes talking about it, so somebody's going to say it.
Yeah, I'm going to come out and say it's an absurd idea.
But we should still do it.
No, I'm doing it. I've already started. I've got my video camera out, and I'm stretching. Yeah. Stretching's okay, right?
Yeah, you can stretch.
This week's photo challenge. Push-ups. We're just no pictures. We're just going to... It's push-up challenge. Yeah. And then we're going to see who can do the most burpees. How about that?
Yeah.
Watch a couple of dudes approaching 40 just break down. That's going to be... That's a whole nother show, man. All right. This week's photo challenge was Hollywood headshots, because next week, Dwayne Gervan's going to make his triumphant return to our show.
Yes.
And going to talk a little bit about posing and how to pose models or subjects, if we were to call them subjects.
Okay.
But then, so in anticipation of that, I wanted to say, let's do some actual Hollywood headshots. So who wants to go first, me or you?
How about you?
Okay, I'll do mine first. I went and helped a buddy. Buddy of mine is just building a house, or just finishing building a house. So he's got the whole inside. There's nothing there. It's important to the photos. That's what's going on here.
Okay.
So I went and helped him. Helped him and another friend of ours hang drywall one night. And so I took my camera. I said, "Okay, I'll come help you, but we got to pose for a headshot after for the show."
Okay, this is the trade-off.
It's the trade-off. Although, again, they get free pictures out of the deal. So, But the thing is that they thought, wow, because we did like a whole evening of work after they finished their jobs. We met them there and then did, yeah, I don't know, call it 6 hours of hanging drywall. And then we met downstairs in the unfinished house.
Right.
And used that as a backdrop and snapped a couple of headshots. Now, after working all day and then working fat all evening, they weren't in the mood for taking an hour to do this.
Okay.
So this happened really quickly. So here you can see I took two. So we'll do two. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do two this week. I don't really care, you know, which one is the technical photo challenge.
Okay.
But there you go. There's Otto Hammerschmidt and Hans Gruber.
Great.
Thoughts?
I like the one of Hans better.
Yeah. Okay. Because?
I think because of the glasses and the harsh shadows under his eyes on Otto.
Yes. That's a good call. On Otto, not the real names, by the way.
No, I didn't think so.
Yeah.
But I like the names anyways.
Yes. Otto, I see, the thing is, I knew we'd be working, and so I brought a white t-shirt with me, which sat in my camera bag, hence the wrinkles.
Okay.
But I knew they'd be in crappy clothing, so I brought that. So they're both wearing the same shirt. That's the joke, but different backgrounds. So that other one, this is a two flash setup. One in a shoot-through umbrella for the key.
Yeah.
And then one hard light on the background.
Okay.
And that's what's lighting it up. So I lit up the background first, just tried to make it kind of an interesting thing because it was a mess back there. That's what these guys kept thinking, like, what are you taking a picture of this for? It is an absolute mess. But when you throw it out of focus, I think it works out pretty well.
It does work well. And again, I think part of why I like the Hans one better is also I just think that the background is just blown away a little more, so it's less distracting, whereas the Otto one, you can kind of make out a bit of what it is, and so you kind of get a little bit caught up in what's going on behind him, whereas that's not the case in the Hans one at all.
Good point. Now, with Otto, I had to move the light to keep it off of his glasses.
Right.
Normally, I would have lit from the other side and had him face and you know, open up his face a lot more, but it created flare.
Right.
And unable to really bounce light and fill in that the parts you're talking about, because I agree it's a little bit too high contrasty in that situation. And then the background for Hans Gruber there, Otto is off camera holding a beer case, like a big plastic beer case.
Yeah.
In front of the light, and that's what's creating that shadow on the background.
Oh, very cool. That's a cookie.
A cookie. Whoa. Don't skip ahead, man.
But that's what it's called.
It is called a cookie, and we're gonna talk about that in the future. So
there you go.
There you go. So that's it. So I do like the Hans one a little bit better, but that's not Otto's fault.
Okay.
Let's get into yours.
Okay.
So we got...
I took three. Yeah, I did one with my wife. I just mentioned that one first. Was a three light setup.
Okay.
So that the setup for my other two was nearly identical to yours. But let me first just say the one with my wife is a three light, not a two light setup. So she is she's in front of like the white background paper, but I'm not lighting the background paper. I've got a key light in a bounce umbrella, and then I've got a fill light in a shoot through umbrella, and then I've got from behind her I've got a bare flash tuned way down to the lowest power I could. That's gonna hit her hair, so you can see that sort of hair light at the top there. So that's a three light, and then because I'm not lighting the paper and I've dropped all the ambient light out of the room, it creates sort of a gray, or it's a black and white photo, but a darker background. It doesn't look like a white background.
Right. Okay.
And that's it. And so,
well, hang on. We'll talk about this one. Before we do, I'm going to ask you a simple question. I just want an honest answer.
Okay.
Do you want a positive review, or do you want me to be honest?
You can give me honest. I'm fine with honest.
Okay, and it's going to be constructive because here's the thing: is there's nothing. This photo's fine.
Okay,
but I know you can do better. So that's why I'm trying to bring out a constructive criticism. In my opinion, she just doesn't stand out because the tones in black and white, her skin tones are not far from her sweater and the background. It's all very, very similar.
Okay.
I would have made the background even darker, which I maybe you didn't have any room, but I would have basically brought her forward another foot and a half or something like that, which hopefully would have, or potentially bring the flash, the key light closer to her and turn it down, which would have rendered the background slightly darker and would have been a different apparent brightness, and you would have noticed a big, big difference between, like, she would have stand out from the background a bit more.
Yeah.
Other than that, I like it because it is a nice, even lighting. Like, there's nothing too high contrast and moody here. It's very nice.
Yeah, I actually like the picture better in color, but okay. I don't know why I just assumed we were going to do headshots as black and white, because whenever I see a headshot, it's in a comedy club and it's always in black and white.
Right.
So, and I actually thought that same thing about all of the headshots I did. I mean, none of them were done for black and white. All of them are done for color. So,
mm-hmm.
I like this picture as well as the other two, all much better in color than I do in black and white. But I've put them here in black and white just because that's how I envisioned a headshot was going to be in black and white.
I admit I do the same. I mean, a lot of headshots are in color now. And I think back in the old days, they were always black and white, even like 15 years ago. But I think a lot of them are done in color, but I didn't mind in black and white, obviously. You saw them.
Right.
And, so this, again, good photo. There's other little things that, you know, are just nitpicks, you know, like positioning of the catch light in her eyes and stuff like that. But nothing I would worry about.
Okay.
But if this would look good would look good in black and white if there was more sort of, I say contrast, but it's not necessarily the contrast we're thinking of. Like you going in and ramping up the contrast levels in aperture isn't gonna fix this.
Right.
This was an in-camera thing. So just saying, for next week, fix it.
Okay. So now we'll talk about the ones I did for work.
Yes.
Were a couple of my work colleagues. So there's a gentleman there. That's Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did... another colleague of mine, Sarah. So this was a real simple two light setup, very similar to you. One shoot through umbrella sort of from the front and camera left, and then another bare flash into what's a beige wall, just flagged so that it didn't hit them directly. But I was in a very small room. So this is in one of our treatment rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to shoot with an 85 millimeter. So I've only got about 8 feet from wall to wall, so I'm backed up and on top of a chair shooting down, and they're about maybe a foot and a half off the wall, so there's enough room to squeeze the light in behind them to light up the wall, and that's it. And so I did these shots, like I did my whole staff, which was I believe 8 people, all in the course of while I was actually working. And I work nonstop when I'm at work. There's no lunch break or anything like that. So in between patients, if I had 3 minutes, I would pull aside one of the colleagues and just, you know, hammer off 12 photos real quick, and then it would be back to working. And then eventually I got around in the course of my day to everybody that was there.
Mm-hmm.
So these were done very quickly, and I was actually pleased with the results, considering, you know, I think I got something usable for every colleague in a matter of, and they could attest to this, probably about 2 minutes a person.
So you're able to just leave the light set up in the room.
Yeah, we left a basically a room set up, so I dialed it all in ahead of time, and then I basically just had to get my camera when I had some available, take a few shots, and then it was just back later for the next one.
Great. I like them. I especially like the picture of Sarah. Is really good. I like the way she's turning her shoulders and the head tilt.
Yeah.
Really like that. And the way her, I mean, I'm guessing looking at her, she has a pretty strong chin in life.
She does.
But it looks extra strong in this photo. Like, this is a really good job of showcasing that. So it's a great angle for that. It really works well.
And I tried to have everyone kind of, like, I was trying to make all the photos very similar, but I did, in looking at the photos of Jacob, I did have a bunch with him turned, and I just liked, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was a combination of the smile or just that I felt for him it looked stronger, more square.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting, and when I was looking through the photos, how I chose to crop some of the guys seemed to be more square. I felt they just looked stronger that way, versus I found without an exception, the female photos all look better with a much more dramatic turn of the shoulders.
And this is mark that down, because we're going to ask Dwayne about that.
Okay, I'm by no means a posing expert, but that's kind of what I found. Yeah,
I'm not an expert either. I do, but I do like the turned, and that's generally where I go. But again, we'll ask Dwayne about that. Now, it's funny you mentioned crop, because that's the first thing I thought of when I saw your pictures. I thought, okay, for headshots, I like your shots, except for my instinct right away with this background was to crop tighter.
Right, and I think the reason I left it, and I thought the same thing, is I could crop tighter, but these were photos that were going to be put on promotional materials. I didn't know exactly how they were going to be used, so I was leaving kind of room for however they were going to be used, just to leave some wiggle room. So if they wanted to crop them tighter, they could, but I didn't know exactly how they're going to be used, so I went wider than I thought I needed to.
Well, that's great for in that situation. That's absolutely the way to go. But in terms of presentation, if I was going to hand this into, like, say, a casting agent,
right,
I would crop them how I put a couple up there of how I cropped them. Did you load those up?
I'm looking at it now. I do like the one of Sarah. I think that crop is nice. I mean, I think the photo of her looks good either way. But certainly, yeah, if you're going to a casting agent, I do like your crop on that better.
There you go.
And I'm looking at the Jacob one. He's not getting the job either way, so.
Yeah. No, they're casting for awkward friend who's on the computer too much.
He's your guy.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of typecasting, but I should point out I don't actually know Jacob, and he might listen to the show, so.
No, I promise you he does not, but I'm going to tell him what you said about him.
Adam told me to say that.
Yeah.
So there's that. So Eggs of Oku for these pictures. I pulled out the f-stop, by the way. So I have the red. Let's quickly, because let's do the your two coworker pictures. The two coworker pictures are the same Eggs of Oku each, and my two photos are the same.
Okay, what are we looking for here?
The f stop.
The f stop.
Okay. So I have all the other info for mine, because I was going to a construction site, and I knew it would be a complete mess. Like it was dust and mess everywhere. I didn't feel like bringing my 5D, so I brought my 40D and the 85mm lens to the site. So you should know that mine's a crop sensor.
Okay.
Shot mine ISO 200, shutter speed of 1/200th. I meant to do 1/250th, but I forgot. It was complete darkness in there, so every light you're seeing is from the flash. There's nothing, absolutely no light coming in.
Okay.
So it's 100% flash. So it's ISO 200, 85 mils, 1/200th of a second. What f-stop did I use to get this picture? That's what we're looking for.
Okay.
Now, Adams, yours was shot at ISO 250.
Yep.
Also 85 millimeters, but you shot on your full-frame camera, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And again, maximum shutter speed of 1/160. And again, yours was lit entirely by flash as well, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Because there's a horrible kind of bluey light that was in that room that had to be killed.
So what is the f-stop of Adam's picture? Now, I'm going to give you everybody a little hint. Judging by the amount of light that comes in, is not going to help you. Because with the flash could be turned up, you know, it could be on full power, it could be on 1/16th. You know, we don't know. It doesn't matter. That's not the point. But the point is, with that sort of depth of field and what's in focus and what do you think? We use that to determine the f-stop.
Okay.
Whew. All right, let's go have a nap and come back for part two.
Okay, good night.
This week's topic, nothing to do with headshots. This one's group shots.
Okay.
We talked about this in the past a little bit, and it's one of those things that, I wish I was better at. And so I'm trying to get better at it, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm not an expert. I know you do a lot of group shots.
I'm not an expert. I do group shots because I have families. Sometimes I like to photograph, but I'm not an expert.
So why are we doing a podcast if we're not experts?
Just because we felt like it.
Bam. There you go. That's all it takes nowadays.
Yeah.
So I did go to a couple of experts because I wanted to find out what other people think. So a couple of months, actually a couple of months back now, I took a, managed to meet up with Chris Marquardt and interview, do a quick interview with him on the street, actually. It was kind of funny. We did it while we were walking down the street.
Yeah, and, sounded like it. I heard the interview.
That's what it was. A man on the street interview. He was in, right in the middle of a photo workshop, and he took a few minutes out, which the guy he was doing the workshop with didn't mind at all, and just talked a little bit about doing group shots. So let's have a listen to that right now. So we're here in Tübingen in December. Nice sunny snowy day. I'm here with Chris Marquardt.
It's cold.
And Guy, I'm going to say Festa or Testa?
Festa, you got it
Festa.
Right.
I was right there the first time. So I'm right in the middle of one of your workshops, correct?
Yes, you are. Holding a two-day workshop for Guy here.
Okay, so I'm interrupting, but during this time, we're going to talk a little bit about group, taking a group shot. Now, every time you do a workshop, I notice that you always take a group shot at the end of it.
That's key. First of all, people want some memento, want something to look back to, and a group shot kind of encapsulates that. At least I try to do that. And it's a good exercise because everyone learns something about photography. I don't do just a group shot. I include the group as part of that. I explain what I do and tell them why I do these things. And so it comes together as a part of a teaching exercise as well as a nice result for everyone.
So how many people are in a typical group shot?
Well, it depends on the group. I mean, I've done workshops for as little as 6 people and as much as 25 people. So could be anything, a small family group up to a football team size or soccer team size.
Okay, so let's say you have 12 people in your group shot. Where do you start? What are some tips on where to start with a group shot?
Well, the usual composition things apply. I mean, we're looking at, for example, the background. I try to not have any trees grow out of people's heads or any background is too busy for the shot, so it distracts too much of the group. That's the first thing. So finding that location, finding that backdrop is good. And if I don't find one, a good trick is to climb onto something or shoot from a window. So that's pretty much turning the ground into the background. And that takes a lot of things. Well, let me open the door.
When you're shooting something like studio. That, a group shot is difficult to, let's say, oftentimes you'll blur the background. So shoot at something like an f2.8 or something like that to get rid of the background. But that's difficult to do with a group shot.
It is difficult because in the group shots, you typically have people layered. You'll typically have, like, depending on the amount of people, at least a couple or three layers deep. And that means that you want that group in focus, everyone in focus. Which is, by the way, where raising your position also helps, because you kind of get everyone more into that line of, into that focal plane. So, where were we?
So once you have the background set,
yep,
you've got like a nice depth of field where you're going to hold focus. How do you start positioning people?
Well, first of all, I put the camera on a tripod. That's for group shots. I want to take more than one shot because every shot will have someone who's blinking or not looking right. And so I give myself options. And having the camera on a tripod helps there, because I can later kind of cheat and put like use the head from one picture and put that in another picture, and this way open someone's eyes or change the expression. That's actually a very common practice nowadays in group shots. How do I position people? Well, first of all, I look at the light. I rarely ever take group shots in bright sunlight because then you end up having either people are squinting or one person is casting a shadow onto another person. So light is always very, very crucial. I try to make sure that people are kind of evenly lit. And that usually happens almost automatically if you're somewhere in the open shade, for example.
So do you ever use a flash?
For group shots, rarely. Just for that reason, because a direct flash will cast shadows. Unless you shoot pretty much from the front and you use the flash from the front, and then you lose the depth. So you'd have to set up multiple flashes, or you bounce the flash off a ceiling. If it's not too high of a ceiling and if it's a wide ceiling, you can obviously bounce a flash and create this diffuse light situation that is then again going to help.
Do you ever think of a theme for your group shot?
Always. I want, actually, two things. I want people to kind of be closer together. There's a difference between a group shot where you identify that these people as a group versus you have a shot of 12 individuals. And that has to do with a few things, like you can move them closer together. You can have them visually overlap, which is why 12 people next to each other, yeah, might be a funny thing, but they don't really come across as a group. Sometimes we use a prop, like everyone's holding a camera. That makes them a group as opposed to 12 individuals. Sometimes it's a gesture. Everyone smile, everyone frown, everyone give a thumbs up, everyone wave, everyone do something that kind of melts that together as a group.
So we got soft light, pay attention to the background, yep, and a common theme.
And if you can't get the entire group in focus, try to step onto something, shoot from a bit of a higher angle. This also helps avoid people covering up each other. But that's pretty much group shot in a nutshell from my point of view.
Great. Thanks a lot, Chris, for taking the time.
Totally.
Okay, so that was Chris Marquardt. If you don't know Chris Marquardt, well, you should. You want to go to Tips from the Top Floor and check out his show, his podcast, his workshops. I think he's just getting back from Japan as we record this.
World traveler.
He is. He just did a workshop with the Snow Monkeys. And I urge you to check his stuff out. If you're listening to our show, you've likely heard of him. But if not, check him out at Tips from the Top Floor. We'll put a link in the show. So thanks again to Chris for doing that.
Okay.
What I found really interesting and something I hadn't really thought about before was his idea of basically having a uniting theme. Because the whole idea of doing group shots of a group of single people or a group of people as one unit, I'd never really considered.
Me either.
So, and I have noticed that. I've been on a few of his workshops before, and I've noticed that whenever he does the group photo, it is really fun. Like, he always makes it fun. Like, let's everybody do this. Everybody put your hands in the air, or everybody wave them like you just don't care. And everyone gets into it. And all of a sudden, you look at a bunch of different single people become one big group. And so that's something I'm going to consider in the future. So maybe everyone has a camera. Everyone has something to do that's the same kind of thing.
Okay. I agree. I think that's a good idea.
So, and the bit about backgrounds too, I thought was, I mean, I already do that, but that's a really important point, is pay attention to that.
And that's something that definitely for my first year or two of sort of amateur photography fumbling around, that was something I didn't give a lot of attention to, and now I pay way more attention to.
Right. So you yourself, Adam, you take a lot of group shots.
Yep.
The family stuff you talked about.
Mostly family stuff.
Yeah. Where do you start what's the setting? Like, when do you find yourself taking these pictures?
Usually with my own family, but I do, because of my wife posting lots of pictures of group shots on her blog, get requests to do group photos. So it depends. I mean, sometimes it's in a family home, because where we live and the people we know, often group shots take place down at Gary Point Park, where I've posted many, many a shot of my family or my kids playing down there. It's just a great setting. So, you know, I guess it just depends on weather, time of the year, because I've had a few requests to do photos, and then I think we're going to do something outside and the weather does not cooperate in Vancouver. So then they become indoor or backyard pictures where you just quickly run out. So usually you start with, well, where do they want to take the photo? What's meaningful to them? And then try to work within those parameters.
And whenever you get the extended family together for a photo,
yeah,
you usually have, what, two and a half hours to work that?
Yeah, I think the best thing I can sort of contribute to this discussion is with family photos or group photos that involve children, is get everything set up ahead of time exactly how you want it. I know, you know, you're going to be probably have a little bit more wiggle room with older kids or a group of adults. But bottom line is if you're going to do a group shot, you might have one or two impatient people regardless of their age.
Mm-hmm.
So just get everything set up ahead of time, have an idea in your head of what the group is going to look like. And then have all your settings dialed in. So really all you have to worry about at that point is, okay, get out here, stand here, look at the camera and go. Because yeah, with young kids, and you know, mine are 5 and 3, but I've done much younger than that, you might have 2 minutes and then one of them's crying and the parents want to get them out of the picture. So get everything dialed in.
And on that note, don't, when I tell people, okay, listen, I need 5 minutes to go and, or 10 minutes to go get set up and then bring everybody in.
Yeah.
Invariably somebody waits 2 minutes and then brings their kid in then while I'm getting set up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that kid's window of 60 seconds of cooperation starts then.
Yeah.
And so by the time we go to take the picture, forget it. We missed it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to reiterate to people when I say 10 minutes, I'll come get you.
Yeah, that's what I usually say. I say, stay here.
Yeah.
I'll come get you when I'm ready. Don't come down beforehand. And the other thing that I think I should give everybody as a tip, and parents all know this, I think it's obvious, is don't be afraid to bribe your children.
Mm-hmm.
I do this almost every time I want a cute photo of my kids, is I bribe them a small candy, a chocolate, whatever it takes, whatever's meaningful to them, for what you think is a fair trade-off for the photo. Yeah, don't be afraid to bribe them. My children will pretty much put on the smiley faces and love each other for a photo if it means a small reward.
Like iPad or something.
Yeah, sure, yeah. But yeah, it's amazing what a 5-year-old will do for a small chocolate. So, you know, keep some of those on hand, a lollipop, whatever you need, and yeah, some fruit leather for those healthy people.
Right.
Yeah.
I go the other way with my daughter. I just withhold love until she smiles. And then
yeah, that's another move, but it works. I assure you it works. I took a photo today of a Valentine's photo of my kids, and the reward was a small heart chocolate. So
yeah.
And again, got great smiles, got two loving children who, you know, 3 minutes later wanted to tear each other apart. So,
and then 3 minutes after that, begging for another photo, Dad. Hey, Dad, want to take some more pictures?
I think the other thing that I always think about with group photos too, and I'm not sure if Chris hit on it, and maybe I'm not sure that Amber did either. But what I like, just a personal preference, is I always kind of like levels.
Right.
Like I like people to be at different levels. So most of the photos that I take, as long as they're not, you know, more than 8 or 10 people, where it just gets way too difficult to try to position everybody if you're in a real big group. But in a smaller group of, you know, 8 or 10 people, I like to try to, you know, position some kids down low, some up top, maybe someone's holding someone's ceiling on the shoulders. But I like to create a lot of different levels in a group shot, especially if you have a relatively quiet background.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it adds a little bit of spice to the shot.
If possible, yeah, absolutely think about doing levels. What is the run-in?
What is the run-in?
Yeah.
The run-in is the camera on a tripod and not using a an automatic shutter release, and so you literally put the 10-second timer on and then sprint to your spot in the photo. So I'm famous for the run-in.
That's why I ask. That is your big thing. I know I've done a few run-ins this year, but I'm nowhere near. Like whatever I do, you probably do 1.6 as many.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that I do.
Yeah.
I've done the run-in like, you know, a good 50 meters, like where literally, you know, I'm still in full run when the camera goes off. So
That
is the literal run-in. Yeah. I remember last summer doing one where we were at a cottage or cabin, as they call it in the West Coast. And I set the camera up on a dock, like one cottage over, mm-hmm. and then had to run down the dock across to the second cottage, back up the dock to get the photo, and made it like the fifth try.
Really? Why don't you just swim it?
Yeah, I think I would have been wet when I got to the picture.
Likely. Yeah. But that would be an interesting photo, though. Yeah. Just Adam soaking wet for no reason. Huh. Weird choice.
Yeah.
So that's the run-in. Yeah, I have done it myself. You know, that's it. All you got to do is make sure you leave a spot. Everybody knows, where's daddy going?
Right. And the other thing with children and group shots, because, you know, they're not going to look at the camera for very long.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly helps to have, you know, people standing behind you, jumping around, you know, especially if they're a young child, preferably a parent, you know, waving something. Anything that you can get for like a 1-year-old or baby, that's a bright object that they can swing around, that will obviously attract their attention for a short period of time. And then you hope that everybody else is cooperating at the same time.
So we came across an accidental one over Halloween when we had a kids' party, and we're trying to line all the kids up. And really, you're not, you know, you get a whole bunch of kids, you get 20 kids all under the age of 3. Your expectations are rather low.
Right.
But I just kind of wanted to get everybody in their costumes in one picture. And, of course, it was not happening. Until somebody, one of the parents accidentally spilled raisins all over the floor, right in front of the kids.
Right.
And they all, boom, they were on raisins. Like, I don't remember liking raisins as much as my kid likes raisins.
Right, but me either.
She is on it. So they're all on it, and they're picking through them, and they're looking up, kind of smiling, like it's very happy at what they found. And if you burst off enough photos, you'll get one where a good majority of the kids are looking up, smiling.
Right.
So don't be afraid to spill raisins on the floor.
That's a great takeaway.
Unless you're like a health freak and don't want your kid to eat dirt. because I didn't want my kid to eat dirt, but that went out the window quickly.
Right.
Because she eats dirt. Yeah. Awesome. Anyways, next interview, I also wanted to talk to Amber. And this was days before she had the kid, like literally 2 days before. So she's now had the kid and everybody's
great,
you know, happy. But that's what I referenced at the beginning, and don't explain anything to do with it. So that's where that is.
Okay.
So let's have a listen to Amber and see what she has to say about taking group photos, especially at weddings. Okay, so we're here with Amber Hughes. Amber, you know from the previous two guest spots on the show. Welcome back, Amber.
Thanks for having me back.
I'm glad you're available. We try to sneak it in before your life changes. So
yeah, not long now.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about taking group shots. And this is something that I wish I was better at. And I think that the people who are really good at it are few and far between. But I know you, shooting a lot of weddings, end up shooting a lot of group shots.
A lot of group shots, especially in a wedding itself. You know, you have the family groups and then you have the bridal party. And it's a lot of groups throughout the day.
So how do you manage that? Like first off... how do you start with a large group? Because usually I end up having to shoot. I try to make sure I shoot a group shot of the entire wedding, whoever shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you do?
You know, I actually don't do that often. I often have weddings that will have, you know, 200, 300 guests, so that can be quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
That is something I do on request if my bride and groom ask for it, but it isn't a standard shot that I do. And just like you say, I mean, just logistically, it's trying to find that spot to do everybody can be really difficult. And that's why.
Do you try to talk your clients out of it?
If they request it and we can find a good place to do it, absolutely, I'll do it. No problem. If we're going to have some logistical problems, then that's something that I will caution them that we will have quite a difficulty trying to set that up. Mm-hmm. I don't really try to talk them out of it per se. I just try to counsel them on how much time it's going to eat up of their time if we're having a hard time trying to find a spot.
That's what I meant to say. Yeah, it becomes such a massive time vacuum.
Oh yeah, it really does. It's like herding cats.
That's exactly what it's like. And I try to pitch it to them, to my clients, that listen, you can have this, or you can have, you know, like 12 different setups for portrait shots.
Exactly. And I find, honestly, the big group shot, usually, you know, there's a lot of people who aren't looking, or people you can't quite get their face out from behind somebody else if you can't get above them. I usually try to find some place when I'm doing that shot, if I can get, you know, higher up, like on a balcony, and then look down. Mm-hmm. That's usually my preference, but sometimes you can't do that. And then it's, you know, you're just not getting everybody, really. And they're all very tiny. And I find it's, if you just take the time and maybe do some smaller groups, like these are all my work friends, these are, you know, all my school friends, then you actually get those photos where you see all those people, but you don't have to do that big group shot.
So if you are going to shoot a large group, and by large, I mean 20 or more, because that's, I know 400 is extra large, of course.
Oh yeah.
But you end up having to deal a lot more often with groups of 20 plus.
Yeah.
Where do you start for that? What is your usual workflow?
Well, my first thing that I do, and I often will pop by the ceremony venue beforehand. I always want to do the family photos right after the ceremony. That's the best time to do them. Just then you're not at the reception venue trying to find the aunt who's wandered off and gotten herself a cocktail or anything like that. Everybody's immediately there. They're all excited. They all want to see the bride and groom. That's their opportunity to get those photos. I usually pop by the day before or even a couple days before and just have a look around at the time that the ceremony will take place, just to see what the light's like and see if I can find a spot that has, you know, a good non-distracting background, good even light. I'm always looking for open shade. That's always my preference. And then that's what kind of where it structures what I'll be doing. And that's basically my workflow.
For the larger group shots, do you light them?
No, I don't, unless they're inside. I do sometimes have to do them in a church or another venue like that, just because of, say, rain, or we don't have a good spot outside. It's all full sun. And then I will light them. But for the ones that are outdoors and open shade, no, I just do regular natural light.
That's why you look for the open shade, the nice even lighting.
Yeah, it's my favorite, honestly. I love being able to use my flashes when I can, but for me, there's nothing beats natural light.
What is your lens preference for a large group shot?
I'm usually shooting with my 35 mil. I know there's two different schools of thought with doing group photos. I tend to use wider lenses, and then I use a tighter lens for when I'm doing, usually I'll do a full length shot of the smaller groups, and then I'll also crop in, say it's, you know, her and her parents or something like that. So I'll do a longer lens on my other camera. A lot of photographers out there will recommend using a longer lens for even the bigger groups. But I mean, for me, I think that, like, I'm, you know, however far away, trying to yell at them all to look at me, and you're dealing with such a shallow depth of field. I just, for me, for a group shot, it just doesn't work for me. I don't like kind of guessing whether or not everybody's going to be in focus and trying desperately to get their attention. So for me, I like to use the wider lenses when I'm doing the bigger shots.
That's exactly what I end up going that way. I like to stick with the 50 if I can.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I will exactly. Go to the 17 to 40 if I have to.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now the one
I like my 35 because it gives me just a little bit more than the 50, and I'm just a little bit closer. But I do also use the 50 quite often.
I would use the 35 if I had one.
Yeah. That's, well, there you go.
That's the rub there. Yeah. See, what I like about the wider lenses is that it does give you that grab deeper depth of field.
Exactly. And for the family photos, I mean, you know, you're not trying to get anything too crazily artistic. I know some people will go out there and do some crazy stuff, but I mean, these are photos for grandma and grandpa to put on their mantelpiece, and they're going to want something pretty standard. And for me, I just want to make sure that everybody's face is sharp. You can see everyone, everyone's smiling, you know, that sort of stuff, and just get through it quickly.
That's what I find is a lot of them end up being, unfortunately, a little pedestrian.
Mm-hmm.
But I likened it to a comedian I heard many, many years ago in an interview. And he said he would go to the club every night and do a different act. Like, he'd be just busting his ass trying to do a different act. And then he thought, it's not the same crowd.
Yeah, exactly.
I can do the same thing. And so I at the beginning used to try to vary every group shot I did. For each, you know, each, okay, now it's my, you know, my parents and the bride, or now it's grandma and grandpa and the bride. And I thought, they don't all live in one big house.
No, they don't. And this is also for them, a lot of them, this is the first time they're getting these photos, and this is all new to them. So they just want something where they're all looking happy.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not saying I phone it in, but I try to make sure you make it about the people.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's say you have a medium group shot. Okay. Or, well, back to the large group, 20 or more people. How do you wrangle them? What how do you get everybody to look at the camera?
Well, usually I do two things. The first thing I do is I usually stay in one spot, and I'm directing my second shooter to, and I'm standing where I'm going to be taking the photo, and I have my assistant second shooter. I have her or him kind of moving around, and I'm guiding them on how to arrange everyone. I find that a lot easier for me, just because when I'm standing further back, I can see if people's faces are blocked, and I can move them accordingly, instead of coming up close and trying to do it and then going back and looking and, oh, that's not quite right. And then it's quicker and easier to arrange people that way. And then because I'm standing there and I'm directing the whole time, everybody knows that I'm the one in charge. And at that point, I'm looking at everyone, I'm making eye contact, and I'm being very loud. And I always say, okay, you know, we're going to take a few shots. I'm going to count to three. Each time I count to three, try not to blink. And that's what I do. And I always tell the people who are always, there's always that group of people behind you with cameras. And I always tell them to just hold on, let me take my photo. And then after each photo, I'll give you a chance to get your photos. And that always helps to make sure people are looking at me. There's always going to be somebody who doesn't look at you. I don't know what that's about, but if you take extra photos and you're really loud and bossy like that, you eventually they'll look at you.
Yeah. When you start to position the large group, do you start at the back and work forward, or the, Where do you start?
Well, I start. I put the bride and groom in the center.
That makes sense.
I always anchor it first with the bride and groom, and then I try and build. The next thing I do is I think to myself, okay, who's the most important in this photo? Who's the closest to them? Mom and dad or whoever. Try to get them in close. And then from there, I just look at who's taller, who's shorter, and kind of build from there. Like you said, it's good to sort of build your back row with the taller people.
Mm-hmm.
And often I'll say, you know, if you're taller, like, make sure you're in the back, and that helps. Sometimes it's hard when you've got everybody's the same size. I've had that happen a few times where everyone in the family is exactly the same height, and that can be difficult. But for the most part, that's usually the way I go.
And then after you take the big group shot, that's usually when you break down and take the medium shot.
Yeah, and my biggest piece of advice there, and this is what I usually tell my bride and groom, because what I do before the wedding is I have them send me a list of, okay, these are the family photos that we want. But the recommendation I always have, and the best way I've found to do it, is to do your big group shot. So let's say we're doing both sides of the family, the brides and the grooms. And then we're going to do just the bride's side of the family. And then the next group shot after that will be, that'll be, you know, the bride, the groom, her parents, her aunts and uncles, all that. The next shot will be just her core family. So basically you're going from one big group and you're just pulling people out.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically you're barely having to move what's in the center, which is the core of where you're getting to, which is the smaller photo of just her and her parents, and then just her and her siblings. And it, instead of having to do like the big group shot and now everybody out, and we're just going to do the aunt and uncle, and now everybody out, we're going to do the core family. And then it's faster that way. Mm-hmm. I find.
I try to shoot people out as well.
Yeah.
And there's always the, you know, the restless sort of
extended family who
you
get them and send them on their way. And they usually take two or three photographers with them.
Like yeah.
People standing behind you end up going with
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So when you're dealing with a group of, let's say, eight, is it just a smaller version of the large group of 20, or is there something else, other dynamic going on? What do you look for?
In terms of posing? Or?
In terms of posing.
Well, usually I just, honestly, I just put them in a straight line. I know that's not very exciting, but it's just, for me, the family photos are pretty standard, pretty, like, portrait studio is basically what you're doing.
And then smaller groups, like, say, a group of four, is there anything different than that? Do you look for, do you change up your lens, obviously, or?
Yeah, I usually, like, for a smaller group of four, I'll do the full length with my wider lens, but I also have on my other camera, I'll either have my 50 or an 85 or something like that, and I'll come in tight. Mm-hmm. And usually for those shots, now those are often the parents or siblings or something like that, and that is where I do change it a little bit, and sometimes I'll have them interact with each other a little bit or, you know, just look at each other, talk, that sort of thing, and then I get a bit more emotion out of them. I find that's it's usually better than doing it with the smaller groups than with the big groups because it's a little bit awkward and they might not all be as close and that
right.
sort of thing.
And so when it gets down to, let's say, like the bridal party, like when you tend to have fun, how do you decide on what they're going to be, how they're going to be posing? Do they decide?
Well, no. That's a little bit different, actually, and that's a good question. For me, it's a bit harder to explain because it's almost because at that point, we usually go off to different locations. And the inspiration for me, honestly, comes from what the background is. And I often find myself making that decision on the spur of the moment. Okay, let's try doing this. And that's a little bit more on the fly for me. I do often try to take at least one standard formal. We're all standing in a line, looking at the camera, that sort of thing. But then from there, I try to mix it up. I often will do, you know, the bride and groom in the center, and then I'll try and make kind of little vignettes, little groupings of people. So I'll have, you know, a groomsman with two bridesmaids doing some different poses. Then there'll be two bridesmaids together with linked arms and so on and so forth. And if it's not working, then I try and, you know, mix them up a little bit more and see what else I can do, but just try and move them apart from each other and get sort of that fashion-y kind of group pose.
And how long does that take before they start to loosen up and get into it?
I find honestly, usually because I've been working with them since the morning, I've been making my jokes. I often will do group shots of just the bride and her bridesmaids and just the groom and his groomsmen before that. And honestly, what I usually do is one of my favorite things that I do is I'll have, just the groom in front of his groomsmen and he'll, you know, it'll be like they're kind of a little bit blurry in the background and then there's just him and he's looking at the camera all serious. And then I'll ask them, is there something embarrassing, you know, about the groom? and that always gets the best expressions and that actually gets them kind of loosened up and kind of into, making, you know, just making a more fun of it. And I find that at that point, they're a little bit more trusting. You know, I'm usually saying things to them like, that looks really awesome. You guys look hot. Like, you know, it sounds cheesy, but at the time it gets them going.
Mm-hmm. That's the issue I have is sort of, deciding what the pose is going to be and getting everybody to sort of act natural.
Yeah. It can be really hard. You know, it's sometimes I find it's better to do the sillier shots or not silly, but, you know, let them have personality or be like yelling or like smiling or laughing. And then after that, do the more serious shot.
Okay.
Because I find that they're kind of more into it. They're going to give it a little more like smizing. I find that's usually the best way to go.
Do you ever end up having to deal with kids in the photos?
Yes, and absolutely.
What do you do?
Usually what we do is we try to get those photos over with quickly. Mm-hmm. they're usually some of the earlier shots that we do because kids get bored after a very short period of time. I often will have someone who knows them or my second shooter, if there's nobody outside of the photo who does know them, come and stand behind me. like directly behind me and call their name.
Okay.
And that usually helps get their attention looking at me. And just try to take quickly as many photos as you can, because they're going to be looking all over the place and getting cranky and pulling their skirt over their head and all sorts of stuff. So
yeah, that's difficult at the best of times. That's what's good about digital, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one thing.
Yeah, I have had to swap in a flower girl before.
Like in Photoshop or in real life?
Yeah, in Photoshop.
Oh.
Sometimes you just got to do it.
I think I might consider just traveling with one and just subbing her in.
Yeah, she'll do. She'll do anything you say.
Get in there, Heidi. You can do better.
Yeah.
Real quick, if you're going to do a group shot of let's say 8 people,
mm-hmm.
you're going to shoot with the 35mm lens on the full frame camera. What f-stop are you hoping to be at?
Usually I'm at 4.
Okay.
It depends on the group, but yeah, usually at about 4.
And that's going to give you enough depth of field to hold focus.
I haven't had a problem with that.
I try to get, I have a really hard time explaining to everybody quickly that all of their eyes should be the same distance from my camera.
Yeah.
All 8 of you. If I draw an arc around here, you should all be on this this arc.
You know, I don't so much say that, but I always try to tell them that I need them all to be perfectly in line. You shouldn't be curving in towards me. You know, we need you to be all in one plane, basically.
Right.
I find that's a little bit easier for people to understand, because when you start talking about eyes and stuff, it can get confusing.
Right. The Germans always want to know the specifics, so.
Oh, yes, they're very precise.
What choice do I have? Well, that's great. That's some great tips, and thank you very much. Where can people find you online?
Well, they can check me out at amberhughes.ca or on my blog, which is where my latest work is. It's blog.amberhughes.ca. And my Facebook is facebook.com/amberhughesphotography.
And I recommend everybody check it out, and I know a lot of people have been... said a lot of nice things about the things you've shared in the past. So thanks again.
No problem. My pleasure.
And once again, I wanted to thank Amber for taking the time to talk with us about that. It was great tips. And make sure to check her stuff out at amberhughes.ca, which she just said, but I'm going to repeat. It's okay. Because I really think you should go and check out her photos. They're excellent.
I will.
You have. Don't patronize me. You already have.
Yeah, no, I have.
But keep That's doing true. It. She does post a lot. I mean, not in the off season, I don't think. But during the wedding season, she posts a lot of her pictures on her blog. So I recommend people checking that out. You can learn a lot from it. So I find myself at weddings. I don't do weddings often, but when I do, I end up, one of the things I like to do is take a group photo of the entire wedding, everybody who shows up at some point.
Right.
Now, these aren't like, I've done a few... like Croatian weddings and stuff in Vancouver, and I never had to take the group photo there because they are like 350 plus people.
Yeah.
But generally weddings come in at around what, like 120 probably. And so
sure.
I end up having to, you know, I like doing it, and I don't mind doing it if I can do it quickly. And so what I end up doing is I do what Amber hinted at there is I find a high up vantage point. Like there's a balcony or anywhere where I can stand at least, I'll say 10 feet plus above everybody.
Right.
Because now you don't have to worry as much about the background. You don't have to position people. You can just basically get everybody congregating around the, you know, in this case, the bride and groom. And just tell everybody, okay, get back in tight and have a look up here. And you can see everybody's face because they're looking up.
Yeah.
The chins disappear. So that's nice. And we don't have to worry too much about everything else. So that's for huge groups. I find that shooting down. Now, it's kind of a novelty picture. It's like I wouldn't shoot smaller groups like that. But you kind of give up a lot of, you know, compositional aspects just for the idea that you have 120 people in one shot.
Right, yeah.
So I also, in that case, I'll use my 17-40 lens.
Right.
But try not to go as too wide because you can end up getting distortion around the edges. So that's my tip. My other takeaway for that is to, when you're doing this, a large group shot, is to take charge.
Yes.
Make sure everybody knows who's in charge. Don't leave room for questions. I don't even tell people. Well, you must have taken some sort of first aid course in your life.
I have.
When you tell someone to do and this might sound kind of funny, but when you tell someone to phone 911 in an emergency, like let's say you're taking charge at an emergency, you say phone 911. What do they tell you to do? I'll just answer
what,
for
what
you.
What does who tell you to do?
If you walk up and you come to the site and you take charge and you want someone to phone 911 while you jump in and help somebody,
yeah.
What you don't
they tell
do,
you to like yell it at them.
Yes, but to one person.
Yes.
You'd be very specific. So what you do is you don't just yell out, hey, somebody call 911, and then assume someone will, because they won't. What you do is you look one person in the eye and you tell them, phone 911, when you're done, come back and talk to me.
Yes.
Now, it's that kind of direct behavior that you're going to want to display when you're running a group photo. It is you. Do this, do this, you do this, you do this. Now, it doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. No decision is worse than a bad decision in this case.
Okay.
Okay? So nothing wrong with being curt and direct. And if some people, you know, don't be a jerk about it, but be very specific. And that's that. That's otherwise, you're going to end up, it's going to take five times longer than it needs to take. So I get everybody lined up and you get a big group of people. Well, obviously, you don't have time to look through the camera and address each individual person looking at the camera.
Right.
Or check and see if, hey, can we see everybody? You have to do a kind of a quick survey of it. And if you took the time to do that, somebody would stop looking at the camera. Or
absolutely, yeah.
So you don't really have time. So what I do, this is what I yell out. If you can't see the camera can't see you. It always gets a big laugh, believe it or not.
It's bold.
Kills. It kills. And that's the truth. So I tell everybody, hey, look at the camera. Look at the lens. If you can't see it, it can't see you. And then I assume everybody's going to be in the shot. Fire off about 10 or 12 pictures in burst mode. And then I do a second thing where I have everybody, okay, now everybody wave at the camera. So everybody puts one hand up and somehow everyone likes that. And the mood shifts and everybody's very excited and happy. And it keeps them a little off balance and natural and ends up for a good shot.
Okay.
There you go. That's it. I don't think I have any. Oh, no, that's not true. I have one more tip that you hinted at and we didn't talk about early in the photo challenge this episode.
Okay.
When taking a group photo, how is it being printed? How are group photos being printed and framed? What size?
I guess it depends.
There you go. Meaning what? So what does that lead us to deduce?
Leave some room, some wiggle room.
Leave yourself a lot of room around the edge.
Yeah.
So that the shot can be cropped a number of different ways, because perhaps it needs to be used in an 8x10, or maybe it's an 8x12. Is it going to be a 5x7? Square? Maybe it'll be a square. You don't know.
Yeah, maybe it'll be a gallery wrap.
Maybe it'll be a gallery. Ooh, that's interesting. Because, wow, my first gallery wrap, I got burned on. Because I did not leave as much. Because I left edge room, but then they required more edge room. So
didn't work out.
It didn't work out. And I learned a valuable lesson, and now I don't. Now I make sure I leave plenty of room around the edges. So that's it for group photos. Any questions?
No. I want to take more of them and practice all these wonderful tips.
Yeah.
Did that sound sincere?
It did. It did. You know what I think we should do is take Amber's advice and go buy the 35mm lens.
Yeah, I'd like one of those.
Yeah.
I should worry about just getting a 50mm first.
I don't know. I might skip ahead to that. 35.
You've got a 50, though.
Yes. I'll sell you mine for way too much money and then buy a 35, though.
That sounds like a great idea.
I would like the 35. But they're really expensive, though.
Yeah, they are really. I don't think it's ever going to be really in my budget.
No. What are they, $1,500?
Yeah, I think somewhere around 13 here. But yeah, the 50mm 1.4 is like free compared to that.
So. Compared to that, it is. Compared to other stuff, no.
No, yeah.
Not that free.
It's selling in Canada now for about $400, the 50mm.
Right, and that's what I end up using for my group shots, if I can.
I use the 50, but...
And I was using the 30 millimeter on the crop sensor, and still that is my go-to for a group shot.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, roughly the same as the 50 millimeter, right? And focal length.
Generally, terms. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, for all intents and purposes, it does the same thing. Yeah, I grab my 50. I basically decide I'm going to shoot at an F8 is where I start.
Yeah.
And then I move from there. If I can afford to give up depth of field, I'll go to a 5.6 or around there.
Yeah.
I know Amber said she'd like to shoot at an F4, but on a 35 millimeter, an F4 is, you know, a little bit more depth of field than on a 50 millimeter.
And I don't know how the whole depth of field change works with the full frame versus the crop, but shooting two people on an 85 millimeter on a full frame at, you know, I used to use F5.6 as kind of a go-to.
Yeah.
At F5.6 with those parameters, it is nearly impossible to get, you know, four eyes all in focus with an F5.6. So I'm finding with that 85 millimeter, I need to go to like a 6.3 or like even an F8 to really make sure that that just two people are both going to be in focus. And that's them standing what looks to be in the same focal plane.
So, do you know why that is?
Well, the 85.
So, say no.
No, okay, no.
Okay, good. We'll have a show all about that in coming up, and we'll talk about the difference.
Okay.
Good to see that you're catching up on the cues.
Yes. right on track.
The simple hints that I'm giving out.
Yeah.
Next week's challenge. I got one in anticipation of Dwayne coming. It's basically a two-parter. We did headshots last week. This week, we're going to do harken back to Madonna.
Okay.
And we're going to ask somebody to Vogue.
I thought you were going to say strike a pose.
Yeah, well, that's what it was. But isn't the song called Vogue?
I guess so, yeah.
I'm guessing. I'm assuming that's what it was called. Now, did I just tip my hand as a huge Madonna fan?
Kind of.
I'm not.
Like, earlier today, you were posing as somebody who could do a lot of push-ups.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, that's just... Okay. Maybe you'll pose doing a push-up.
No, it's not going to be me in the shot. I'm not going to...
But you're...
Huh?
You're not going to do the push-ups?
Yeah, no, I'll take care of that. Don't worry. I'm going to out-push-up you. It's the worst part is it's going to be embarrassing for you.
Okay.
Because it's not going to be like one. Like, you know, I'm going to do one more than you. That'd be crazy.
Right.
And we're not going to do a video. We're just going to do it in person one time. Next time I'm there, which is not for a while. So you have time to practice.
Okay.
But you're not going to.
Oh, I'm going to practice.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be this whole disqualification thing. That's not technically a normal... Like, I don't know what the rules are for push-ups. So if you could establish what an actual push-up is, what good form is...
No. I think you can sort of be a little bit lenient on the terms. I don't plan on being, like, you know, it's extraordinarily strict on the push-up technique. But I just mean, like, they can't be awful looking.
No, mine are amazing looking. Okay. They may not even be functional, but they artistically they are sound.
Okay.
Even the Russian judge likes what I do.
That's good.
Yeah. So next week, Vogue. So that says get somebody, again, your wife likely, to strike a pose. And I don't even know what that means, because hopefully Dwayne is going to explain to us how to do that.
Okay.
Here's how I anticipate it going. I anticipate you and I doing something that sort of lame,
right?
And him beating us silly with it and making it better.
That's usually how it goes when we have a guest, isn't it?
I hope so. It really worked out for our Star Trails pictures.
Yeah,
I still haven't done mine, but hey, warm weather. Some people are, though. More people are posting. That's good to see.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm glad, and I really am interested. But I'm going to make that a summer thing.
Yeah, me too. I mean, literally, since we did that episode, there has not been one clear night in Vancouver.
No, so I don't know that we've
had it.
Just
not the time of year.
No. That is it. Adam, where can people find all your photos?
Our Facebook Two Hosers page.
I like the Facebook. And Facebook, by the way, there's a picture of me and Mr. T up there. Did you see that?
I did see that.
Yeah.
It's not really the real Mr. T, though.
No. No, nor is it a guy who played him in the new A-Team movie. But I thought, wow, man, maybe he wants to be on our A-Team.
Right, he's in. Did he agree?
Oh, yeah, he's in. He doesn't know much about photography, though.
Okay. And if well, that's okay.
If we fly anywhere for a photo workshop, we're going to have to drug his milk.
Okay.
So, other than that, he's good to go.
Is it okay if I finish my answer to the last question?
I get a few more minutes on this.
Okay. On, my daughter's waking up. She's calling for her mother right now.
Okay, hurry up and do that. Well, problem solved.
Yeah.
Okay, hurry up and finish that.
The other place you can... You can oh they're both up. This is perfect way to close the show. The other place you can find my stuff is on my wife's blog, schwartzchronicles.com. And how about your stuff?
AlanAttridge.com. And as always, you can find both of our stuff on twohosers.com, where you can find the Facebook, Google Plus, Twitter, sandwiches, stuff like that. All over at twohosers.com. Or in iTunes. Check us out in iTunes because people have been giving us more reviews, and that's very exciting. That's it, Adam.
Great.
Go deal with your stuff, and until next week, get out there and make better photos.